Hi, my name is Taco. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby.
This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour Canada report recorded on Friday, May 2nd, 2025. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the report this week, why flower moon time during May is important to Indigenous cultures. The Labour Start Report of Union Events and Rappin.
UFCW Canada, stand up. Blue, gold, bold.
This is Radio Labour.
We as Indigenous people need to be included in the decision making. We need to be included on things that greatly impact our lives. We can't continue to let non-Indigenous people make those decisions for us and not include us at those important tables.
That is Charmaine Saint-Germain. Ms. Saint-Germain is a union relations officer for Local 401 of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. The local represents about 32,000 members in Alberta. Across the country, UFCW Canada represents more than 250,000 workers. Ms. Saint-Germain is one of an increasing number of Indigenous and Métis women who have committed themselves to political action in support of their people. For example, in the latest federal election, the NDP elected Leah Gazan, a member of the Wood Mountain Lakota Nation in Saskatchewan. She won the riding of Winnipeg Centre. Lori Idulut, an Inuk lawyer, won in Nunavut. Recognizing the efforts of Indigenous and Métis women is especially relevant as we enter the month of May. In many Indigenous cultures, the month happens during Flower Moon, a sacred time in many Indigenous cultures that honors the return of vibrant blooms and the healing energy of nature. And so, on Red Dress Day, May 5th, there will be efforts to raise awareness about the ongoing crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people. May 10th is Bear Witness Day, which honors the memory of Jordan River Anderson and highlights the importance of Jordan's Principle, a child-first initiative that ensures First Nations children have equitable access to government services. And on May 15th, Moose Hide Day, people, particularly men and boys, will be asked to wear a square of moose hide as part of a campaign to end violence against Indigenous women and children. Here is Ms. Germain talking about her experiences in the UFCW and the NDP.
I guess I can say that my union activism is in my blood. You know, my father was a union representative with the Alberta Union of Provincial Employees, and I really became involved with my union around 2008 when a friend of mine who sat on the Superstore Bargaining Committee really encouraged me to join and get more involved. My first experience with bargaining was a real eye-opener for me, you know, to experience how my employer really was at the bargaining table, which wasn't great. And then to see the union bargaining committee there in solidarity, you know, fighting for a better workplace, for better health and safety and wages and benefits and dignity and respect. It just seemed to ignite the activism and activist in me. I really care for those people around me and the people that I work for and represent. And I'm not someone who would just stand around and watch someone get treated poorly. So it just made sense that I would become a shop steward in my workplace and help advocate for my co-workers, you know, to help to give them a voice for when they needed it the most. So I started taking as many union courses, education courses through not only my local, but through the labor affiliates and community groups as well. And that led me to joining and chairing a variety of equity seeking committees and caucuses over the past 16 years, which includes the Human Rights, Equity and Diversity Committee with UFCW Canada. And I really enjoy meeting and learning, you know, discussing diversity and equity issues with other USCW members from across Canada. You know, we have an opportunity to discuss and collaborate what we are doing with locals, but also through a national office. Currently, I sit as the Women's Private Sector Co-Chair for the Alberta Federation of Labour. I am the treasurer of the Indigenous Peoples Caucus with the federal NDP. And I sit as a labor VP and a member of the Indigenous Peoples Caucus with Alberta NDP, as well as I'm part of my executive board with Local 401 as the recording secretary. And as I mentioned, you know, I'm a labor relations officer and I oversee the diversity committee within our local that is run by members. So I ran federally in 2019 and 2021 election for the NDP in Edmonton Manning. I felt it was important that Indigenous women or Indigenous woman of Métis descent put her name forth. Canadians were seeing a rise in the cost of food and housing. People were really getting concerned about how they were going to afford to live. And Indigenous issues are important to me. So, you know, we have a government that promised to implement the 94 calls to action, and there's been very little movement in completing those actions. We were in the middle of a pandemic. So in 2021, people from diverse backgrounds were the ones being targeted the most, you know, and were also generally impacted the most. You know, I wanted to be a part of it, of that change that needed to occur. You know, I felt it was important to run and be a voice for those who needed it in my community. And I wanted to be a representative for Indigenous people and women at the highest level of government in this country, because I knew our rights were at risk and they've always been at risk. And I felt I could make real change. So, you know, I facilitate the Indigenous Activism course that was created by USW Canada in collaboration with Indigenous communities. And I sometimes get asked why it's important for Indigenous women to run for government, you know, at any level of government. And, you know, my reply is that there needs to be representation in all levels, you know, whether it's on your union's executive board, as union representatives, union presidents, VPs, you know, on city councils, MLAs, MPs, and so on, you know, because we as Indigenous people need to be included in the decision making. We need to be included on things that greatly impact our lives. We can't continue to let non-Indigenous people make those decisions for us and not include us at those important tables. Our workplaces are made up of so many people from different diverse backgrounds, and those members need to see people like themselves in decision-making positions, fighting to make lives better, fighting for equality and inclusion. You know, by having elected Indigenous officials, helping the Indigenous communities by giving them a voice and, you know, increases the ability to be heard. We need more representation at those big tables so that we can create real change and that we can be heard. Things need to be improved in Indigenous communities across this country. You know, I don't understand how in 2025 in a first world country that so many Indigenous communities don't have something simple like safe drinking water. And that is just a tip of the iceberg in terms of Indigenous communities and what their people need. I do know there is a, you know, a mistrust, and it comes from a long line of lies and genocide. You know, that's why we need to see more of our people running for government, amplifying their voices and advocating for what their communities need. You know, there needs to be more collaboration, more listening, and learning needs to occur by non-Indigenous people, so that we can move forth and heal and feel that we belong at any table that's making decisions about us.
Here with his report about union events is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
This week, the top story sections on our Canadian, French, and English language pages included the end, finally, of the Quebec port lockout, which has seen QP members on the streets for 32 months. A QP lockout record. Also up there on the priority food chain this week were coverage of Steel's joint workplace safety pairing with Los Mineros, a Mexican mine workers union, and several statements marking the resignation of federal NDP leader Jagmeet Singh. We also carried news of the posties gearing up for a return to bargaining at Canada Post, an assortment of analyses of the movement's role in the election, and some statements marking May Day. Mostly just statements, but there were also some events and actions scattered across the country. But my favorite item among our Canadian stories, at least, was from Unifor. Faced with an all-blue southwestern Ontario after the election, Unifor is moving quickly to educate a flock of new Tory MPs on the auto industry, how it works, and how important it is to the regional and national economy. That should be fun. As Labour Start is a global organization, I should slip in at least one non-Canadian story worth being highlighted for you today. This week, that story is May Day, from a resurgent labor movement in the U.S. coming together against the Trump regime through a joint statement from trade unionists forced into exile by authoritarian regimes around the world, to the hundreds of trade unionists arrested for violating a ban on public gatherings in Istanbul. This week's May Day was an unusual one in good and in bad ways. An unalloyed upside to this year's May Day was that after an anti-austerity protest in Fuseta, Portugal, I was able to add to my Union May Day banners collection thanks to the good folks of the CGTP in Portugal. Obrigado, camaradas. On our Working Women news page, you'll find stories from Canada and from around the globe in 9 languages. Stories like a piece from the Hospital Employees Union in BC that confirms that healthcare, where most workers are women, is the most dangerous industry in British Columbia. CUPE's statements at the UN's Commission on the Status of Women, and an announcement of the winners of the Alberta Union of Public Employees Day of Validation and Equity Awards for 2025. And among the Canadian items appearing on our health and safety page in Newswire this week were more assaults on hospital workers in several provinces, but getting the most attention was an assault on an emergency room nurse in Brandon. Labor Start's photo of the week was a shot of a crowd of Argentinian actors, members of the Asociación Argentina de Actor y Actriz, at a national protest on the 25th of April. Like hundreds of thousands of other union members, they were demanding an end to the chainsaw policies of the Milei regime. Labor's history is what our current struggles are built on, and this week we mark the anniversary of these events. This week in 1986, Shirley Carr became the first woman president of the Canadian Labour Congress. A coal miner's daughter who became a member of the Canadian Union of Public Employees, she was also the first CLC president from a public sector union. In 1906, socialists in Montreal organized Canada's first May Day demonstration. The following year, 10,000 people assembled in the Champ de Mars before the crowd was dispersed by police. And finally, this week in 1952 saw more than 1,000 retail employees, most of them women, begin a strike at Dupuis Frères, a major department store in Montreal. Support for the new militancy among Catholic unions helped the workers win a collective agreement. There are lots more labor history items like this to be found at the bottom of our Canadian news pages. Look for them and be inspired. Labor Start hosts online solidarity actions at the request of unions around the world. This week, we'd like to highlight urgent appeals for online solidarity with trade union activists in Azerbaijan, Turkey, and in Belarus. If you can spare just a few seconds, you can do your part in struggles like these by sending a solidarity or protest message. Look for details on our site. This is Derek Blackadder from Labor Start, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here is a new Solidarity Forever.
No more division, no, we're bringing a new vision. And it's just in time from ashes, we give birth a new tradition. Solidarity forever, keep our feet fixed on the past. In order to stay rooted in our mind's eye on tomorrow. So that today we get through this, so that one day we're victorious. So just gather now, come here. Divisions are created by those who doubt and fear. We give thanks to all the workers who put it all on the line. Those who took it to the streets, moving crowds with conscious rhymes. Those who gave their lives, give thanks to those who made laws. Laws only work for those who make them, not break them, be patient. The best way to protect your rights is by always knowing your rights. Without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. So put your hands together, all under one umbrella. It's time for unity, solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Yo,
Your profits never seem to help the people prosper. Your money's being hoarded and the people are unsupported. Social welfare's been aborted, labor crimes go unreported. When we try to fight back, it seems we can't afford it. We try to be united, but they're implementing laws that are keeping us divided. They're commodifying labor, then they're bidding for the lowest. They're thinking that it's clever, but we know it's something better. Solidarity forever. Now jobs are disappearing and all we're ever hearing is pay a lot more, get paid a little less. Work a little harder, then work a little longer. But we're taking it no longer. We're decided, we're uniting, cause together we are stronger. The unions got our back, CBAs, protections, better wages, a fact. So we're making our choice and we're making some noise. We're walking with poise and we're raising our voice. We're singing.
Solidarity Forever was produced by UFCW Canada. And that's it. Labor news you can use. I'm Mark Boulanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about solidarity.
The red dress, hanging from a window, a porch, or a doorway, is a powerful symbol and a reminder of the ongoing epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people. Monday, May 5th, was Red Dress Day, and the National Day of Awareness and Remembrance for the missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and 2SLGBTQI+ people. And red dresses hang throughout all three campuses of Simon Fraser University. At the entrance of the Burnaby campus's Student Union Building, a memorial display has been set up by SFU's Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, or SVSPO, and the Women's Center, giving students, staff, and community members the opportunity to remember, memorialize, and pay tribute. Konstantin Lazitsky, a staff member at Out on Campus, SFU's 2SLGBTQI+ student organization, attended the memorial.
I think it's a very powerful symbol of the red dress because it is so striking and so visual, and then it reminds you just seeing one or two, and then you start seeing more and more of them around campus, seeing them on different campuses, seeing them in the community, just to give you a tangible way to realize the scope of what is happening and how it isn't just, oh, somebody else's cousin or sibling is lost, or somebody else in the community that I'm not really connected to. All of those stories are real, but they may not connect to you in, on the same way as it is hundreds and thousands of people that should be here, that should be in community, that should be still doing everything they wish to do, but instead they're not here with us. And so I think it is a way to bring some sort of symbol of them back, to bring something that was taken away, that is no longer here, to bring the people who are important back into the communities where they matter. And so I think it is so important to see visible and proud declarations that this is a day to remember all of the folks that were taken and they're gone and that we're hoping will one day be returned to their communities.
Paula Quilos-Cruz is an educator with the SVSPO and helped organize the memorial.
Today we are hosting awareness tables and memorials in the three different SFU campuses in Vancouver, Burnaby, and Surrey. We wanted to make sure that non-Indigenous people have a space where they can come and honor missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit folks, learn more about it, what actions they can take, to reflect also on their own commitment and how we can change this epidemic as well. And then to have a space to meet with other people and maybe do some coloring pages and some pins. Also bring offerings to the memorial table, or they can take one of the flowers that we have there and they can bring it back to the land or a park close to their home. Thinking about all those sisters and friends and grandmas and aunties and the daughter of someone and some other folks who are no longer here because of this colonial epidemic that is happening in Canada. The Red Dress started as a campaign many years ago that was entitled the Red Dress Project, and it was launched in 2014 by Métis artist Jamie Black. And what this artist wanted to do was to honoring all these women who are no longer here with one red dress. And so that is the symbolism of the red dress, the ones that are not here, but that again are present, and it should be in all our memories to remember that is not something that we need to forget.
Quilos-Cruz started by connecting with Indigenous-led organizations on campus.
It was very important first to consult with the staff from Indigenous Student Center, as we wanted to, of course, honor the Indigenous voices and how we could do this in a respectful way.
This consultation helped ensure the event was culturally appropriate, and the collaboration led to a display that is engaging and interactive.
I thought that having a memorial table is really important, just to pace yourself and stand in front of this table and reflect what is happening here, and also make the table interactive. So that's why we invite people to bring offerings like a leaf or a stone or anything that they wanted to bring to the table. But if they couldn't, then they will have the possibility to take something from the table and connect with the land, because we know that Indigenous folks are connected with the land, and then the land is also part of their lives. So as a way to kind of honoring both things.
Julia Lane is one of the many people who stopped by the memorial.
I am here because I think it's incredibly important on this day, but also all days, for us to remember and hold very close in our hearts the kin who we have in the larger human context of being related to one another, who have been stolen from us, whether that is being murdered or by being stolen and they are now what we would call missing Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit folks, and recognizing that that is a really horrifying, tragic, and violent part of ongoing colonization in these lands. I'm feeling I came in feeling overwhelmed, so I'm feeling overwhelmed, but I'm also feeling really grateful to the folks who put it together and put it on as a place for us to hold those feelings of sadness and overwhelm together. And I'm feeling very grateful for the invitation that I was offered to take a rose and to bring the rose to the land, because it feels like an active thing that I can do and an opportunity to remember the women and the girls and the Two-Spirit people, and also hold beauty and remember that there is beauty in addition to all of the harm and the hurt and the sadness.
One of the activities at the memorial prompted visitors to take a piece of paper shaped like a dress and write down actions to help raise awareness and work towards ending the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people. As Lane explains, it can be a daunting challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough to think about what kinds of actions are helpful, because I feel like so often actions that we hear about or think about or talk about are just not enough, and I feel that. So yeah, I guess one of the things that I've been reflecting on recently is just like recognizing and naming that all the like really deeply insidious ways that violence is interconnected. Violence against so many folks, violence against women, and violence against the land. And so recognizing these intersections and these interconnections and naming them and calling them out and being really consistent about that, so that we are able to challenge the more like insidious forms of this kinds of toxicity and violence when it comes up, might be a way that we help to keep it from escalating into the really extreme forms of violence that also continue to happen.
Regardless of what suggestions might be made, Kilos Clues hopes that students and community members can take something hopeful and useful away from the memorial.
So just to reflect and learn more about the history of Canada, because there could be some students that maybe are just arriving, they don't know what happened before. So learn more about the history. They can hang a red dress in their window, or they can wear all this week red if they want. Also reading the final report from the National Inquiry of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls, and see how they can work in one of those actions, and also as individuals, an invitation to reflect what as change makers, because we are all change makers in this community, they can do in order to bring more awareness or share this with family or talk with their partner, with their friend, and support different Indigenous initiatives here on campus and also outside of campus, challenge lots of biases and stereotypes towards Indigenous people. So there are so many ways that folks can create action towards this. It could be something small, something big, but at the end of the day, if we are actioning something, then we're making a difference.
For CGSF, 90.1 FM Burnaby, on the unceded territory of the Hunkaminam and Squamish-speaking peoples, I'm Jesse Wentzloff. This report is made possible by support from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative, and can be found online with stories from across the country at frequencynews.ca.
No trouble anymore. Just still on the porch, you with your purple. rocks and tell me how's your heart a stone.
Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to the Big Thinking Podcast.